Good afternoon. I'd like to call the House Finance Committee to order. Today is Thursday, January 23rd, 2015. Time is 1:32. Members present are Representative Wilson, Gara Pruitt, Vice Chair Sadler, Co-Chair Thompson, myself, Co-Chair Representative Newman, Representative Edgman, Gaddis, Representative Guttenberg has been excused, and Representative Nunez. Today's agenda, so we do have a quorum. Today's agenda is February Governor's Budget Overview with Pat Pitney, Director of Office Management and Budget. Pat, come forward, name and affiliation and presentation, please.
Thank you so much for having me, Representative Newman and Representative Thompson.
First time at the chair.
First time behind the chair in this role. And well, with the university, I spend a lot of time. but for the record, my name is Pat Pitney. I'm Director for Office of Management and Budget for Governor Bill Walker. And I really do appreciate the opportunity to come and speak today about the budget proposal that we're putting forward. With the transition and with the steep decline in oil prices, the budget comes in a little different form. As you know, with the transition, we submitted the work in progress budget of the previous administration as a placeholder to meet the statutory deadline. The information I'm going through here is the endorsed budget for Governor Walker. But what we'll see in the bill that was transmitted is the work in progress budget. So please focus on the information here. If you happen to have the bill, it's not really where we're going from.
As we go through the presentation, feel free just to raise your hands. We'll address you. Keep questions on point. It's a fairly long presentation. Pat says thinks we can get through there in an hour or so. It opens it up to further discussions if we want to expand beyond that. We have 3 to 3:30 today, so that's where we're at on time. Thanks, Pat.
So, you know, what's in the best interest of Alaska? Putting Alaska and Alaska first, that's what we want to do. What are our priorities? Making sure Alaskans have the necessary opportunities to succeed. A stable economy in this downturn of state budgets. We don't want to come down so fast that we upset our own economy. So we want to focus on that. And then making sure we get the big things done. Education, keeping our focus on resource development. That will be where the lion's share of our revenue comes from, no matter what happens. And affordable energy. That's very important to a stable economy. And then, of course, supporting Alaskans and Alaskan families. So what was the budget guidance we gave to our commissioners? Overarching, limit spending. Starting today, going into fiscal year 16, and then looking forward to the next 3 or 4 years, that we would have to limit funding. The immediate fiscal year 16 guidance, we asked that they look at a 5% and 8% reduction in addition to what was in the work in progress budget, which was also a lower budget than the prior year. We asked every agency to be part of that reduction. The size of our budget gap is so large that no one place can be immune from participating in a reduction. We asked people to focus first on the administrative structures. To what degree could you address your administrative structures, limit the administration, at the same time maximizing the level of service that you can continue to maintain? Also, are there ways that we can be look at how we do business differently in terms of privatization, partnerships? And the partnerships are both with nonprofits, with local governments, and with tribal entities. And then finally, you know, which programs are out there that aren't required by law? And let's address and question those first. One of the multi-year approaches is we're also looking at the statutes that have been passed in the recent, say, in the last five to ten years. Which ones of those have we passed, and what do they cost? And do we want to revisit any? We could probably even go back further. Are there statutes on the books that we're putting money toward that aren't maybe no longer necessary, or that aren't as high a priority as some of the other functions? So, but that's through later in the session or even into the next year, that analysis. The last piece, of course, is to involve Alaskans. These choices are going to be difficult. We want to do it as open and transparent as possible, and really understand how they impact the public.
And members, if we can just go back to that page, Pat.
Uh-huh.
On this multi-year approach, as many of you are aware, when we've done the heads-up meetings, we've asked the departments to look at, you know, 3 to 5 years somewhere out. Last night, the governor talked about doing a 4-year plan. The bottom line is this, you know, we'll have this budget for another 30-some days in the House here, and we'll work with the Senate, but with the legislature here is less than 90 days left before we have to get a budget approved. We know that we're going to be doing our best to reduce energy, or not reduce, reductions within agency operations and trying to find efficiencies. But with the deficits that we're looking at, this is going to take several years to try and look down the road. So with the budget shortfalls that we see coming, this quite probably is going to take major restructuring within the departments as we know them in the services that we can provide Alaskans. So, you know, it's my plan, and I talked to Steve about this earlier, Representative Thompson and the commissioner. You know, this will be working throughout the year to try and make sure that we work with the administration on the restructuring with the individual departments that we have as budget finance subcommittee chairs and the administration as we move along, so that next year, hopefully, we have a plan by then developed on this restructuring of the departments, how they're going to be funding. Part of that's going to include, again, private partnerships and what we can do, you know, asking for their assistance, particularly in creating jobs. When we worked with the Department of Labor, with Representative Wilson, you know, there was a discussion on outreach to private industry to help a little bit more on training programs, you know, so for vocational type programs. And see, we've got Mr. Batrami and the rest of some union representatives in the back. You know, we'll be looking to them for their assistance, you know. And again, it's involving all Alaskans and what we can do to try and look at Alaska's future in the budget. So that's our goal. You know, so you kind of know where your chairs are coming from, and working together with the governor and in private industry to come together with a full plan next year on restructuring.
So our first budget chart here. What is our budget overall with all funding sources, federal, other state designated, unrestricted general fund, and the permanent fund is $13 billion. That actually is remarkably close to what it was last year. So the reductions, but the sizes of the pie pieces are different. The major difference is a reduction of $550 million in the unrestricted general fund, and an addition of $100 million in the permanent fund and $450 million in the federal. So although the bottom line number is the same, the shape of the pie pieces are different. Another probably odd piece of the pie in this chart is the unrestricted general fund of $3.3 billion from reserves. So our actual revenue is $2.2 billion. So we'll be actually using more reserves to fund this budget than there is revenue behind it, very similar to this year. The 2015 estimate is $3.6 billion in use of reserves. This drops the use of reserves down slightly. And And at the same time, the unrestricted general fund is expected to go down from what the current projection for this year is. This was actually a little bit more for my value, so I can get my head around all of the pieces of the budget. But where do the federal funds benefit our state? Department of Transportation, Medicaid, and other kind of equally split. The all other are things like university research, Pell grants for students, DEC, and Department of Labor, heavily federal funded as well. And then the permanent fund slice. There's two main components. One is the dividend, and the other is inflation proofing. And then there's a small slice there for operations. So, click down a level. So this is where do the funds go to? Agency non-formula is a fairly significant chunk of it. You got the capital budget. This is a much smaller capital budget than in prior years. Permanent fund, statewide appropriations, that's tax credits, debt service, and retirement funding. Other formula is primarily health programs, and then K-12. Now, this is in total, so this is on the $13 million all fund sources.
Thank you, Pat. I'd like to recognize Representative Keto. Welcome. And Representative Wilson had a question.
Thank you. And Ms. Pitney, you talked about tax credits just barely in that last slide. Has the administration thought about the possibility, I mean, it's like now $700 million in tax credits and about, I think we heard yesterday, about $300, you know, as far as, you know, tax revenue. Has the administration thought about spreading that $700 out versus paying it all in 1 year because of the way our, you know, revenue is right now?
The current law doesn't provide that opportunity.
So it all has to be paid in 1 year? Okay, thank you.
Okay. So to help see the different pieces here, this particular graph shows the solid ones are the state fund pieces of each of those components. So agency non-formula is, you know, roughly half and half, unrestricted general funds and other funds. The K-12 formula is almost all unrestricted general funds. The health formulas are, you know, two-thirds federal and a third state. The statewide appropriations, the tax credits, retirement, those are almost entirely unrestricted funds. And then, of course, the permanent fund. The capital budget there, you see the very small slice of unrestricted general fund, and the rest is primarily federal. So this, again, is all fund sources at the $13 billion. If we just look at those solid pie pieces, this is the distribution of our unrestricted general funds. So the statewide pieces take up 21% of our unrestricted general funds. This year's capital budget, very, very small relative to past years, 3%. And then it's roughly split equally between agencies' budgets and formula programs for $5.5 billion. So the formula programs, K-12, about half of, more than half, and then you have Medicaid, and the other is primarily other health programs, but there's a few other smaller items. Okay. So this comparison and overall numbers for unrestricted general fund spending from 2013, it was at $8 billion, down to $7.1 billion, down to $6.1 billion. That orange bar in 2015 is the $3 billion into the retirement program.
Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Pat, you probably know it, but you probably actually have a sort of bigger reduction in FY16 than FY15. Oh, between FY16 and FY15 than you show, because we took $3 billion from the CBR last year to pay for some of the PERS-TERS debt, but that included roughly $700 million that otherwise would have come out of the general fund. I mean, it probably was a larger general fund budget last year, or would have been had we not just paid for it all with CBR money. Is that accounted for in that FY15 box?
No, these are through the chair, Representative Gariff. This does not take that into account. It just looks at what the budget sheet is. This doesn't normalize for that effect. But I do want to say the contribution to the retirement program made it possible for this budget to have $262 million in retirement payments versus what would have been $700 or more million in retirement payments. So it was a reasonable decision to put that $3 billion in. It will have more value in the future to bring the retirement fund up to speed. And so I think where we had a hard time getting below the work in progress budget was because work in progress budget used pension obligation bonds that this administration was not willing to use. So the work in process budget was $250 million lower on the retirement because of using a pension obligation bond mechanism that we didn't agree with. So this endorsed budget includes the cash payment for the retirement.
Yeah, and Pat, I agree with you on those things. I just, you know, as you're making your comparisons, you probably cut the budget more than it shows just because a number of hundreds of millions of dollars, which would normally come out of the general fund to pay for the PERS-TERS debt, we instead used CBR money for last year. And I just, you know, as you're talking about this stuff, your budget cut probably is not that it's a bad thing, but it's probably a little more significant than you're showing here.
Okay. So what are the various components over the time? So the bottom two blue bars are the agency non-formula and then the formula programs. So those, although have been increasing, they're the relatively stable components of the budget. The lighter blue bar is capital. That one sizes based on funding available. And then the other statewide is primarily debt. And then the retirement payments. So you can see the large payment in 2015. And then tax credits.
So Pat, there was a reduction in capital expenditures in this year's capital budget. Did you do a comparison of, I mean, a lot of those capital projects had federal match funds connected to them. So if you looked at the capital budget along with the match, you know, your $150 million comes about a $1.5 billion now. It's about 10 to 1 on that. Mm-hmm. So if you reduced your capital budget here by, I don't know, I'm just going to guess here, 60%, are we leaving a tremendous amount of available funds that could be used for infrastructure projects around the state, creating jobs on the table?
Representative Newman, the first stripped down version of the capital budget that was submitted on December 15 took the first look as anything that leverages significant other funds, make sure that's in the budget. So it was $106 million. And I said to the governor, I said, it's a little bit sad that $100 million is your zero base capital budget. So that was our first our first focus was making sure we addressed the leverage capability. So we did keep the most funding in the economy and get the most out of the money that would come to the state if we were ready to receive it. In the second round, where we added a few projects, there were things that we stripped, a small amount of things that we stripped out of that first round that had federal funding possibilities and also had other match possibilities that we restored back in. So that was also a focus on the second round, was to make sure we maximize the leverage capacity in that capital budget. So there's not a lot left on the that we would lose in terms of federal match. I mean,
my concern is that we talked with we worked with Representative Wilson's going to work with the Department of Labor to make sure, as we reduced operating expenditures through the state, there's going to be less state jobs, there's going to be less money going to our economy, there's going to be more unemployment in the state. It will affect our economy greatly. You know, my concern is making sure that we've got projects 4, 5, 6 years down the road as we plan into the future. And as Representative Thompson has stated earlier several times, there's $3 to $4 billion in capital, but that's about 3 years worth of projects. Then what? You know, and so as we're trying to develop a 3 to 5 year plan to make sure, as the governor has presented, how do we reduce this budget without collapsing our economy? Our economy is jobs. That's money that circulates, you know, through our economy as a whole, no matter what job you have. So I'd like to see what type of plan that the administration has coming forward to make sure that we're working on that. And any comments on that?
The only comment is I hear what you're saying, and we will provide the plan that we have.
Thank you. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To kind of follow up to that, so will the governor be looking at any other, because all I keep hearing is that it has to have some kind of federal or other monies going into it to be in the capital budget. Are you looking at any other projects that might be put back in that doesn't have any kind of federal match? And if so, what would the criteria be?
So there, within the $150 million, there are a few projects that went back in that didn't have federal match. And it were those that have significant return on investment, many of the energy and weatherizations, and then a few in the priority areas for teacher housing and other rural housing loan programs, projects that weren't completed, for instance, the engineering building that's got walls but nothing inside. So there are a few things. And then, of course, deferred maintenance. Much, much smaller investment in deferred maintenance than in prior years, but continue to move that forward, because if you don't pay it now, you're going to pay it later.
Thank you.
Representative Garrett.
Thank you. Let me just blow everybody's mind and take the side of Governor Parnell for a moment, but my mind's open. He had in his placeholder budget, this legislature passed a renewable energy fund bill with a non-binding commitment of $50 million a year that would go into it so we could build renewable energy projects across the state. Non-binding because, you know, you can't make that binding in a bill. And Governor Parnell, you know, recognized that we had a fiscal problem and said we can't do $50 million, but put $17 million in his placeholder budget and the operating budget. Is that anywhere, or is that gone, or are we ending the renewable energy? Is that still open to discussion?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, there's $15 million.
There is $15 million. In the operating or capital?
It's capitalized in operating and spent in capital. So both.
I don't think we've ever heard that answer before.
Okay.
What
you ask?
Okay. So, going with the theme of everybody's participating, this is the list of agencies, and this is on the non-formula part, but their percent reduction between between the 15 management plan and the endorsed budget coming forward. So judiciary's virtually unchanged. They submitted a reduction in their work in progress level of almost 3%. And then, and this is the scale of the others. The governor's says 30% here, and that includes the reduction of the one-time items for elections, and it includes a reduction in domestic violence funding from $3 million down to $1.5 million. So the $11 million that Governor Walker spoke about yesterday was just his immediate office is down 11% in operating.
So it does not include the cost of elections?
The 11%, the elections is a separate office, and so the elections amount in 15 was inflated because it was an election year. So this was able to come down by 30% because there was money in there that was specific for an election year that is no longer
there.
There
now.
Yeah.
So because we don't have an election, that's why it's considerably less.
Right. So.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the question. So last night, the governor talked about education and taking out the $25 million. I have the University of Alaska subcommittee, and even by looking at that chart, it doesn't appear like the same percentage was taken out of the University of Alaska. Why would we take more out of education on K through 12 versus the university, or are you not done with how much you're asking for it to be taken out?
So there's three criteria. So one criteria is how much has been increased or decreased in the previous years. So you could call that one criteria or two criteria. The university took a $16 million reduction last year. And so that's one criteria. The other is there's this fuel trigger mechanism was eliminated. So this accommodates the elimination of the fuel trigger mechanism, so it doesn't double whammy the Department of Transportation and the university because of the elimination of the fuel trigger mechanism. They were the main components of that. And then what the areas that we're most dependent on, so natural resources is going to be the department we depend most on to raise the revenue to move out of this fiscal crisis. And so also looking at which things are the priority to maintain.
Can I do a short follow-up? Because the third one I got a little confused on. Because there's nothing more than developing our children in education. So, again, just kind of more or less comparing. I mean, I understand developing our resources through DNR and all those, but back to education compared to the University of Alaska. Education, I mean, unless we're going to start charging the parents or other avenues, they can't raise the same kind of funds as the university. So just coming to number three, when you're going on to the dependence part, can you explain that just between those two areas?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, there's two components of education. There's the non-formula component, which is what's represented here on this chart, and then there's the formula component. So the non-formula component is the Department of Education's administration, small grant programs, Mount Edgecom, that are in that. That particular component has gone up significantly. And the reductions you see here is in that Department of Education programs, not in the K-12 formula.
Mr. Chair, but last night the $25 million was formula. That was not non-formula. So that's what I'm. That's really where my question is stemming from. Is that $25 million that's in the formula? So that's direct education. On that comparison to, which is more important, the university and their budget not being harmed to the same extent, or the actual formula? I understand. You can get rid of the Department of Education. I don't care, but I'm more concerned that this $25 million actually came from the formula.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, the formula reduction is a 2.5% reduction of spending.
Right.
So, and it is that is not represented on this particular chart, because this is just non-formula components. And so that's 2.5%, so it would fall on the between natural resources and public safety if we put the formula on this chart.
So follow-up, sir. So basically we're hitting education twice with two different types of cuts versus the university on this particular one, and I'll wait till the next slide comes, but I'm still trying to understand the importance. Thank you.
Representative Williams has a question.
Thank you. I'd like to follow up on Representative Wilson's question, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. On the budget summaries, you have a $1.35 billion under the FY15 management plan, and it shows a $91 million reduction, or 6.8%. Could you explain that, please? Thanks.
I just asked.
Through the chair, Representative Munoz. So when I talked about the $15 million on the energy that's capitalized in this budget and lands in this budget, that 6.8% has to do with the forward funding. So the governor talked about a 10% reduction in the forward funding of education. So this is actually the amount in the forward funding. So again, it's a net. Well, actually, that's not true. Let me back up. Go back to the 15 management plan. The $1.3 billion included the $90 million one-time funding.
Mr. Chairman, the one-time funding was about $40 million, and it went over 3 years.
Right. The one-time funding was just over $90 million, all in the 15 budget, for $40 million in 15, $32 million in 16, $19 million in 17.
Oh, I see. So you're taking all...
So we're taking
two of the three years
out.
Okay.
And then there's the difference between forward funding 90% versus forward funding 100% of the future year cost. So all of those mix in, thus this says 6.8 versus it was we're only forward funding 90%, but then you have this one-time mix. So summary numbers, they're hard.
Just to summarize, we're taking 2 years of one-time funding plus 10% of money that's already appropriated for forward funding.
No. We're taking the 2 years of forward funding.
Outside the formula.
Outside the formula. And then only forward funding 90%. So we're not... So the one choice is you could forward fund 100%. Another choice is you could forward fund 50%. Another choice is you don't have to forward fund. But if you don't forward fund this year, then you have to pick up the whole thing next year. So we felt like it's prudent to forward fund most of it.
Mr. Chairman, but last year we forward funded. Okay, so are you taking 10% from the money that's already been forward funded?
We're forward funding again for the next year. So we're leaving what's in. We're leaving the forward funding in that was for 16, adjusted for student numbers. And then we're forward funding again for 17, but only at
90%.
Right. Generally, we forward fund education so that the education community knows what their funding is for the next year. $1.2 billion or so that we put into the education fund. I think it was former Representative Harris's bill that might have been the one who did that. I can't remember. This year they decided to do 90% of that. So that's going to probably be about $100 million, $120 million or so less that we're not going to be put into the education fund that normally would have been put in, that we put in last year.
So if I may, then just for clarity, we're taking 10% less for 18, FY18.
we're forward funding less, 10% less than we did
for
last
FY18.
Year.
For FY18? For FY17. 17.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Pruitt.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. So I appreciate that clarification. So what we're indicating is that we are going to, whereas we've been forward funding, we're actually going to eat into next year. We're going to eat into next year's by only forward funding 90%. We're placing a burden on ourselves next year to either forward fund 90% and the remainder. I think we're headed down a wrong direction. I think I'm very concerned with that because we've already come down. We already have a pattern in place where we're forward funding by 100%. If we start slowly scaling back on that, we're going to put the pressure on ourselves in the future. So we're bringing savings this year based on the budget that you guys have presented, if I understand, by eliminating some of our forward thinking and forward funding into next year by 10% in terms of education. Should we expect that would continue next year, that it would be another a 90% funding next year or less? Are we going to make up for what we're not doing this year? I'm concerned about the future years.
So the 90% forward funding is the amount we're sticking in the bank for a year or two.
You make interest on that money?
Hmm?
You make interest on that money?
I think it's in the short-term investment strategies.
So some of that 10% is going to get made up with interest that's made off of it for a year.
And I, Chair Newman, I actually don't exactly know how it works, but there will be some interest, and depending on what the investment strategies are, which the Commissioner of Revenue will be talking about, how do we maximize those investment strategies? But my understanding is those would be in short-term investment strategies.
Representative, the best you can.
But going to your point, the choice to forward fund is not the amount, is not the choice of what the 17 funding for education is. It's the choice to only forward fund that amount. The choice of what we should fund education for FY17 should be informed by the studies the legislature is getting this summer on the K-12 formula. And when that is known, this is just how much do you stick aside in a slightly different savings account. So you have the CBR, you have the SBR, then you have the forward funding. It's very similar to a savings account. It is not, putting any judgment on how much money is for education in 17. It's how much more do we want to stick in this particular bank account versus leaving in the CBR or the SBR.
Mr. Chair, follow up.
Representative Pruitt.
I think here's where I'm concerned, and this is what we'll discuss, is I think it sounds like there's some assumptions made. The assumptions that once we understand how we potentially could deal with the formula in the future, that we would spend less money on education. And because we haven't gotten to that point where we've even had a discussion about the formula and what we're going to do, I think we're being presumptuous. So I'm not necessarily asking for response, but I do want to put out there my hesitation, my concern about making assumptions in terms of education and how we're funding it into the future. So, Mr. Chair, that's part of that discussion.
Representative Garris.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Pat, I'm going to save, I see you have a later chart on education, so I'll save most of my questions for there. I'm just really trying to understand between the governor's State of the State speech yesterday, or budget speech yesterday, and what we're hearing today. So we did a three-year education plan. Last year off, we did non-BSA funding of roughly $42.9 million. This year it goes down to roughly $32.2 million, and then next year it goes down by another $12 million. What you're talking about in cutting is that for this coming school year, so we're doing the FY16 budget now, which will affect the school year starting in September. Are you talking about obviously that first non-BSA installment of $42 million that was spent for this past school year. So the next installment is going to be $10.7 million less. It's $32.2 million. Are you talking about cutting any of that for this coming school year?
That was what the discussion was.
10% of that or all of that?
All of that, which is a 2.5% reduction in the available funding for K-12 in fiscal year 16.
I'll save my questions for when she gets to, she's got an education page
pretty
later.
Clear. All non-formula funding that was outside, funding that was outside the formula for 2 years of the 3 years will be reduced out of next year's budget.
So this is the all agencies. Whoops. Sorry, I have two pictures on my slide. So this is a quick summary of the funding in the capital budget. So the federal match and leverage capacity, so those things that leverage other dollars. This is primarily DOT, a little bit in DEC. Then energy, weatherization, and housing for UGF after reappropriations of $15 million. This is where the $15 million is in the renewable fund that was asked about earlier. So a small amount in maintenance and project completions. So this also is using reappropriations. There was two reappropriations as part of the capital budget. One is the $22 million from aerospace, and a second one was from the Mount Spur geothermal project that has stopped moving forward.
How much money was left in that account?
You know, off the top of my head, I believe it was $12.5 million, but it might have been slightly
about
more.
40 or 42, wasn't it?
I thought it was out of 25. But we'll get those numbers for you for sure.
Thank you.
And then Safe Communities, those are actually from the felon funds, two programs funded through that, and then a small amount of funding to make sure that we take advantage of the U.S. chairmanship in the Arctic policy.
Can I have a question?
Okay. So that talks about where we're spending money. Did you want to go back up here?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the reappropriation, the $15 million, does that affect, for the energy projects, does that affect any projects that are currently underway, or is it excess money from projects that have been completed?
It was just the only reappropriation on the energy side was for the Mount Spur reappropriation, and that project, as I understand it, is not moving forward. Okay. So that's a little bit about where we're spending our money, where we are reducing funds. So a little bit how that fits with our revenue look. So I'm going to provide three scenarios. This is the first of the three and the most optimistic of the three. So the vertical bars are the unrestricted general fund spending over the past 3 years. The black line is our tax revenue, and the assumption is the current forecast from the Department of Revenue that returns back to $100 a barrel oil. So even if we come back to $100 a barrel oil, we need to continue to size down. But what it does allow is it allows our savings to last until 2022. So at the end of 2022, there's still almost $1 billion in the bank. And that's not adjusting for coming down by 25%. So the next case scenario, so it's a little bit more moderate, but still, you know, we want to make sure we can achieve it. At $85 a barrel oil, it would be just over maybe right at 60% of our current spending. Okay, at $85 a barrel oil, our savings will last through the end of fiscal year 18. So more today price look at $50 a barrel oil. That's less than 40% of our current spending level. In that case, We'll have $2 billion at the end of fiscal year 17, so we'd have some bridging into fiscal year 18. So.
And that's, let's just go back to that.
Uh-huh.
You know, my feeling is that to be prudent, we have to look more towards the conservative side of the price of oil. There's more, the price of a barrel of oil goes up above $50, $60, $70, fabulous. I mean, for our state government anyhow. And I go back to the questions that Representative Pruitt was asking about education funding. But along with that is health and social services, public safety, corrections, roads, and all the other mandated, constitutionally mandated programs that we have to do. You know, education is a priority, I know, of this House majority, and I'd probably say of this body, as a legislature as a whole. But at what level can we afford to do it and still meet all of our mandates, looking at the amount of savings that we have with the projections that we have? Mm-hmm. And I think that that's why the governor was fairly clear of everything has to be on the table when we look at this. I mean, it's pretty straight right there in front of us. And if we don't expect a gas pipeline to be up and running until 2024, somewhere in there, and we still have to find money to fund that project, that puts serious budget restraints on here unless we do look at every project. And that's, again, why I think with your opening page, it's just we have to look to private industry to assist where we can with vocational education. Governor Walker talked about talking to our educators and doing the very best with what we can with what we've got. That was the discussion that I heard. And I think this is exactly why we're doing it. Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Pitney, a brief question. Are there any, is there a floor that the administration would have? What level would the governor not allow draws on reserves to go below under any price scenario?
Yeah. There isn't a floor at this point that's set. I think it's we would like to see the forecast hold true and that we'd have that 5 years, but we have to have a contingency in place in the event that it stays at $50 barrel oil. I mean, I think the reality is that the price of oil is not very well correlated to the cost of services in Alaska. And we have to switch from a conversation about what price of oil should we talk about for our budget to what size of government is right for Alaska. And I think that's where I'm heading in the next graph.
Let's also be clear on this too, as we're looking at this. And this, I don't know what assumptions are made here with the amount of throughput in the Trans-Alaska pipeline. You know, this morning we had news of a newer company to Alaska investing potentially up to $1.2 billion in Alaska to produce a considerable amount of more oil that will be going down the Trans-Alaska pipeline. So although we have less oil going, the price of oil is coming down, we're going to have more oil coming into the pipeline at the same time. So we'll look to try and balance that out with revenue in the future here, and oil and gas when they come before us, so we can kind of get the best outlook on what perspectives we have out there with investments. You know, it was brought up on credits earlier, a discussion on credits. Well, maybe those credits are working. Mm-hmm. Representative Edgman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It just seems to me, on the heels of having a presentation yesterday from Ledge Finance and then hearing your comments so far today, that it's really incumbent upon us to apply restraint first and foremost to how much we spend. I mean, I think that's obvious. But at the same time, we need to apply some restraint to how much we cut. Mm-hmm. Because, for example, if I look at the revenue sharing program, if you cut that program down to 100% in 1 year, you're going to have a mess in a bunch of smaller communities that may, in fact, bring forward more problems and more costs than you ever envisioned by cutting the program in the first place. so not to directly advocate for one program. I guess my question would be in all of this, going back to what the vice chair brought up, has the Walker administration thus far had the opportunity to talk to any of the bond rating agencies in terms of the, you know, balancing cutting as well as preserving programs that might, you know, continue the health of communities and may help us better transition to that point where we do have additional revenues or we can downsize state spending so it's on a more even-keeled downward trajectory?
Through the chair, Representative Edgman. I'll start first with the bond rating side of it, and then I'll go into the municipal revenue sharing. The bond raters, and when you hear from the Department of Revenue on Tuesday, I believe, they'll speak in more depth on this. But the bond raters, they see the level of dependence we have on the oil market. They are much more concerned about our moving too fast. They're concerned on two sides. They're concerned with the structural deficit of having one source of revenue. They're also concerned with the sheer magnitude of the difference between our revenue stream and our costs. So they will look to a balance to see what choices we make, to see what action we'll take both on the spending side, but what plan we have for to go forward on the revenue side. So that's they'll just look for the balance and they'll look to the activities and the actions we take as a state. Going to the municipal revenue sharing. So that's a forward funding item similar to education. And it runs on a three-year average of what's capitalized in the fund. So all things being equal, without capitalizing the fund this year, which is a choice that was made, $57 million is available for community revenue sharing in fiscal year 16. Absent anything else happening in 2017, the three-year average would be in the range of $38 million. In our discussions internal to the administration, we feel that in that year, that $50 million is, we want revenue sharing to be at least at $50 million. Whether you do that with a change in saying use more than one-third of what's in the municipal revenue sharing, or do you plus up the 38 to 50? Let's say it was 38. At that point, you still have $70 million left in the municipal revenues fund for the next year. So it does push the municipal revenue sharing question forward several years. And this governor and this administration is very local government conscious and friendly, and they don't want to put the municipalities at risk. So 57, 50. There's still $78 million in the fund at the end of that, then other decisions have been made. We're on a different course. Oil's in a different price. We can catch back up. But it's pushing that off until we have better answers and a different situation.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to... So thank Ms. Pitney for that explanation. I thought that was a very thorough explanation of the municipal revenue sharing program, a program that not everybody really understands how it works. Mm-hmm. And I think that's helpful. And I also appreciate that longer-term vision with the smaller communities as well, because if you do, hypothetically bring that program down to zero in a one-year's period of time, you could end Kliganik or Nishtuyok in some of my villages, you know, you pull the rug out from underneath their city offices and you have nobody there. And that would be counterproductive. So thank you.
The other thing is having strong communities. When we walk out of this, if we don't have a breadth of strong communities around this state, it's really hard to get them back. And so we very much want to preserve the breadth of our communities in this state. And it takes conscious choices on how to manage the budget so it doesn't overwhelmingly impact the smallest communities the hardest.
And Representative Edgeman, my office has had those discussions with several departments across the board, realizing how important the school is to that community. You know, it's a place where everything from funerals to, you know, basketball games and just community involvement takes place. And how do you supplement that? You know, how do you make sure that that stays available to be a core of that community? Those discussions have been across the board with multiple departments, and to make sure that we do protect those smaller communities the best we can.
So now I'd like to jump into so that we can see that valuing government on the price of oil is somewhat of a disconnect. What is in our budget? And again, having not thought about being in this job 5 years ago, I know the university pretty well, but there are a lot of things the state does that now I know. And it's very interesting, but 128,000 students in K-12 schools, 500 schools, 53 school districts around the state, 33,000 university students. I didn't know that one.
We can read through this on our own. Yeah, is there any?
But the breadth of what we do across the state and what the state depends on government to do is vast, and this is only a spattering of things. We have the largest airport system in the world, and we have the largest marine highway system in the world. And this is what we do as being Alaskans. So what I'm trying to do is find what is a rational approach to deciding how much should we spend on government in Alaska. And so this is not scientific. It's just two different approaches that I'll introduce.
I would like to take a minute to recognize mm-hmm. Representative Justin. Welcome to the committee.
So one approach is if we looked at our population and our state spending relative to all the other states, what would it predict Alaska should be spending? So if Alaska were to come down to that average line that's population adjusted, that would be $5.3 billion. Now, California and Texas and New York and Florida, they all exist out here on the graph, but we wouldn't be able to see Alaska if I left them showing. So this line comes out here, and the big four are out here. If we took the big four off and redrew this line and dropped Alaska down to the average, that would be $4.8 billion. So $5.3 billion, $4.8 billion. That's not accounting for the largest airport system, the largest marine highway system, any cost of living adjustment, any adjustment for our geography, any adjustment for the remoteness of our villages, just if we were average, $4.8 billion to $5.3 billion. So that's a very different discussion than a $2.2 billion dollar revenue stream on $50 a barrel oil. So is it the right number? I don't know. It's just context.
And I believe Ledge Finance produced some information for us that last year we were down to about $7,200 per person.
Yeah. This actually includes the permanent fund. So
okay.
Where Alaska is on this particular chart does. It doesn't. The $5.3 billion, I'm assuming, is without counting that. So another approach to look at what size should government be. So I assume most of you have seen the inflation-adjusted, population-adjusted graph that started back in the early 80s that shows essentially inflation-adjusted and population-adjusted, we haven't changed much. What I said is, let's go back to the time where we, as Alaska government, was Salinas, and that was 1998. 1998 was 15 years, was first a big drop in the state budget, and then 15 years of absolutely no increases. So if you looked at agency operating budgets in 1988, or 1998, and you just did inflation, we'd be at, for just agency operating, we'd be at $3.2 billion. If you adjust for population, we'd be at $4 billion. The budget we've presented today is $4.26 billion. So not remarkably far. And $50 barrel oil, again, is less than $2 billion, or right at $2 billion. So.
But they were producing.
Right. So, again, I think.
1.2 million barrels of oil a day back in 98.
Right, exactly. Makes a big difference. So the question is not how do we size into $50 a barrel oil, but the question needs to be, what size government should Alaska have? And then let's manage around that and manage the revenue to meet that. Hopefully we can do that through resource development. That's the plan. Okay, last slide deck. So I stumbled on this one, so I'm gonna explain it differently this time around. I stumbled on this morning. Okay. If I can find my cursor here. So this bar is if we take agency operating budgets down by 25% from 15, leaving the very small capital budget and leaving the statewide components that we have to pay. This is what 25% agency reductions is. This budget is a budget we've presented, which has 6.5% agency reductions. Lost my cursor again. Okay. There it is. This bar is agencies plus formula programs. Okay. So the difference between this bar and this bar is capital and statewide operations. Where does my cursor keep going? And this is just agencies, none of the formula programs. Okay. Horizontal bar, revenue at $50 a barrel oil. The next line up is revenue at $66 a barrel oil is what they're forecasting for fiscal year 16. And then the last line is, if tomorrow it goes back up to $100, what the revenue would be. But you can see even at 25% reduction, we'll be depending on some level of savings, even if oil were at $100. So I think what it says is we need to talk about what size of government we want to serve Alaska. That concludes what I have. The papers I've provided is a summary of the total budget, very summary form. Let's see, I'll find it here. So this document that we talked a little bit about on education, I won't go through it in detail. If there's questions, I'd be happy to answer. And then there's a summary on capital, and then there's project detail on capital provided. This is also online, as we have the details from all of the departments. We'll be passing those over to Ledge Finance. We expect that to be not next week, but early in the week following.
So. Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Pat. I was saving my education question because it doesn't matter why. I thought it was going to go on another slide. Here's my concern. Based on estimates from schools this summer on the budget, the three-year education budget we passed last year, in the MATSU, even with the budget that was passed last year, which now you're trimming down, but based on the budget that was passed last year, they expect roughly a $3 million shortfall. Juno cuts Fairbanks, the PTA did an estimate they're going to lose somewhere between 35 and 70 staff. Anchorage, though they've had problems in estimating, as we've heard, they're estimating the loss of 210, 220 staff. Now you're taking out $32 million from that budget, and it seems like those cuts are going to be even greater. My question for you is, look, you're in a new administration. You haven't had a chance to comb through the agencies, see what other waste, what other duplication you've been able to find. But before the February 18th deadline for an amended budget, are you open to considering speaking with the school districts in a way to see what we can do to avoid more cuts and more staff cuts? And, you know, maybe that'll involve you actually being able to comb through your agencies with more than a month's time to try and find other savings so that this isn't where we get hit.
Through the chair, Representative Garrett, the reality is there's deep cuts everywhere. It's a $140 million reduction, 6.5% reduction. So add 32 on, then you'd go up to 9%, roughly 9% reduction. It's a value. Education is a value. It's a priority. It's being asked to contribute less to the reduction than the others. We are open to working with the school districts, finding out what things that we could do to offset this where it helps them. And but the reality is we're going to have to size down, and all entities will have to be part of the sizing down.
Just briefly, Mr. Chair. I'll say again. I mean, you've had very little time, and you've done very well in trying to meet a deadline for us to work on a budget with. But I really do hope you keep your ears open and speak to all the school districts to figure out the reality of what's going to happen with this budget, and obviously you're going to look through the other agencies and see where you can find savings. And so, thanks.
Representative Sadler.
I do have one after you're done, though.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Pitney, certainly we'll get specific questions and answers when we get to the subcommittees, and so we're kind of probing you on some general principles. I'd like to hear that the administration is going to plan to retain enough money in reserves to make a priority for the AKLNG project. We're going to have to put some money on the table for that. I'd like to hear if you can make any assertion that you will try to retain the ability of the government to pay for that if and when the time comes to make that investment.
The gas pipeline is a very high priority. The funding model may be different than a straight-up general fund cash model. But this is the ability and enabling moving the gas pipeline forward is front and center of the agenda. I mean, it is the way to depend on resource development as our revenue source in the future. And so it's the highest priority, and we will be looking for ways to fund it that aren't just straight up cash. Isn't just straight up cash option to move it forward, but the revenue potential should make that quite possible.
Sure, fellow, sir.
President Taylor.
Thank you, and I'm glad you're here to say the highest priority. I've heard the governor say many things are a high priority, mm-hmm. many things are a priority, and I'd like to know what his number one highest priority is, and I hope that's what it is. Thanks.
It is the only thing that will move us out of, it is the highest revenue possibility the state has.
I agree. Thank you.
And so if we solve that, all of these other questions become less pressing.
Representative Pruitt and Munoz.
Yeah, thank you. I just want to take it in a little different I just actually want to ask a little briefly about the credits you talked about earlier on. And do you have an idea of the credits that we're currently paying this year? Either when will those credits run their course, or like how much is out there? I'm just trying to. Again, it's another future question. We've got the $700 million this year, and I'm kind of meshing your presentation with the one we had yesterday as I kind of formulate my view over what the situation is. How much do we still have out there that's left to pay? Are there new credits that are being added on, or are most of these credits that we're paying this year from under the ACES regime? David Teal yesterday wasn't able to answer that. I thought you might be able to help answer that question that was kind of out there from yesterday. So,
through the chair, Representative Pruitt, I don't know them off the top of my head. I do know over the course of a few years, the projection is they will come down. There are some sunset provisions that are certain ones will drop off after fiscal year 16. But I do know that on Tuesday, the Revenue Commissioner is talking, and he knows that answer.
He's real good at that.
And okay. So we'll make sure that he actually comes prepared to answer that question.
That would be great if you would pass that on to him through the chair. Thank you.
I believe it already has been. And then, you know, obviously with the DNR Budget Finance Subcommittee, we are committed to take an extra little bit of look because it's been an issue in the public's interest. On the tax credits, you know, what drove them going from 35 to 45% for 2 years, companies turning them in, allowing them all to use them all in 1 year. So we've seen a lot of those cashed in so that they have more liquid capital to invest back into Alaska. There's been a multitude of reasons why the investment in Cook Inlet has been a large part of that also. So we'll get into that in a lot more depth. Representative Munoz.
Thank you, Pat. Could you tell me if this budget includes additional, I don't believe it does, but if you have additional needs as you expand Medicaid for staffing in the Department of Health and Social Services?
Through the chair, Representative Munoz. So it would be more like a reallocation of staffing. So as you can see from this budget, Health and Social Services is also sizing down somewhat dramatically. These are program changes. So the addressing Medicaid, the staffing, actually in the staffing in the first year and a half would be all federal funded. But the reality is that they're moving these programs down. Medicaid passes. There will be additional people that are dealing with Medicaid, that's 100% federal funded until December of 2016, and then it steps down over 4 years to 90% funded. So it's a shift of some of those.
Representative Munoz?
How many staff do you think you will need to implement that expansion?
I don't have that number off the top of my head, but I will get it. And we will have significant information sessions on the Medicaid expansion.
Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Ms. Pitney, I was listening to the governor's speech last night. I had a concern. I was looking for things that could cost the state funds in the future. And even though I do agree with the governor, he made a statement that he wanted to hold smaller communities harmless from retirement system penalties. Right now, there's termination studies that have to be done if you terminate an employee, and it's pretty sizable, a little bit of cost of money to a community to do that termination study. But if we're holding them harmless, a future question is how much more is that going to cost the state? We're not going to have to carry that terminated employee on their books as far as trying to get to 22%. What's the cost going to be the state in the future on that? And I'm sure you don't have the answer, but that's a future question that I wouldn't mind having an answer to.
We are working on that.
Thank you.
Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I want to say thank you for this slide. I've just done some fast math, you know, longhand, probably not the new math, but if I take even K through 12 out on the offenders in custody, that means we have one out of every 41 Alaskans who are not a K through 12 student in custody or an offender, you know, somewhere. I mean, that's a high number. If I look at the one that talks about state, university, or K through 12 workers, that means one of out of every 16. That's including the whole six, using the 640,500. I mean, that's pretty, you know, heavy on that end. And then we talk about Medicaid expansion. We already have almost one out of every four on Medicaid now. So where does that grow to? And court cases comes out as well, one out of four. I mean, I know it's simple math and you have repeat offenders, but I think what it does more than anything else, it shows that we have our budget's being driven because of issues that maybe we're not, for whatever reason, addressing correctly. You know, and if they're going to be going in that direction, especially into the court system and that kind of area, that's something that we can cut the budget all we want, but we still have to take care of those kinds of issues. But the one that pokes out the most, and I think that could help us financially, 3.3 million acres in state parks, and we manage 160 million acres of state land. What if we took that and put it into private ownership, or we developed it, or a combination of the two? What would that do for our revenue? And to me, that pokes out the most, Mr. Chair, that maybe we need to quit holding on to all this land and actually put it into private hands for Alaskans. Just a thought.
Look forward to some upcoming legislation, Representative Wilson.
We'll definitely look at it.
Any other questions? President Sadler.
Well, thank you. I'll ask kind of a wrap-up question. I want to toss you kind of a softball a little bit. Before you, obviously, you accepted the job before you knew all was in the budget. In the work you've done since taking on the job, can you tell me anything that's really seriously alarmed you about their budget situation and anything that seriously encouraged you or heartened you? Give me the best and the worst you've seen in the budget.
I think we know what alarmed her.
Let's see what she thinks.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that it's not that it alarmed me. It was more of an aha, is the interrelationship between public defenders, the court system, troopers, corrections, and prosecutors. And then if you make a change in one, the trickle effect, if you're not paying attention to the other four, can be dramatic. So just a court case that says you have to try within this amount of time, or that you must go to trial for all of this and you can't plea, that puts so many other things in motion. And the time frame has changed, like the public defenders, the amount of money that's gone to the public defenders and Office of Public Advocacy is tremendous. But it was in response to calls from the courts or the prosecutors. But then that turns on, you know, troopers then have to take prisoners here or there. And so the interplay between the various agencies, and in that one in particular, you can just see the cost drivers. I'm not looking at so much from a safety standpoint, but you have to consider the safety standpoint, but just the cost driver of making one decision over here and what happens in these other four was more of the aha moment since I've come in.
Is that an aha or an oh no?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. With that, let's turn to next week's schedule. Oh, Representative Edgman, excuse me, I had a question.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. A wrap question, too. It's, you know, from where I sit, anyway, it's just, it almost seems a given that we're going to be back here next year incurring additional costs or reductions. And sort of grappling with the same issues that we're looking at today, trying to make all this fit in the short term as well as keeping the long term viable for the state of Alaska. But that said, has the administration, are you contemplating taking this statewide after the end of the session in some manner that would involve the state as a whole? And I ask that because cutting the budget's the hardest thing to do in anywhere, legislature, administration, wherever. But to me, to do it right, you need to understand the value of the programs and what's actually happening at the community level, at the regional level, at the statewide level. I'd argue the 90-day session as the body that appropriates the budget, that that's pretty hard for us to do, to dig into these programs and services and make judgments, as to the true impact of what's happening when we cut these programs. So, has the governor talked about maybe having some kind of statewide forum later on, or bringing this out to the greater state in a way that, one of your first slides talked about, partnering with other Alaskans to make these difficult choices?
Through the chair, Representative Edgman, some of the first phone calls that I made when I started this position were with entities that I know that are communicating with our larger audiences on the state situation. So Commonwealth North, Common Ground, Institute of Social and Economic Research. Our plan is to begin engaging, well, we have through the website engaged Alaskans for ideas, but we must collectively, and that everyone in this room, everyone engaged in public policy, must begin taking the time to educate the broader public of the situation that we're in and the choices that we're facing. Until the wide audience understands the sheer magnitude of the fiscal issue that we're facing, we're not going to accept either the cuts or, a revenue opportunity. And people at this point, the larger public, may not understand the cuts that are required. This particular reduction is going to be significant across every entity, across every service. This is step one. This is less than a quarter of a 25% target. There are things we need to choose to not do. Our preference is to choose the things that are of low value, but everything the state government does has a value to someone. And so, yes, we will have those conversations. Is it going to be in a form of in a forum or an Alaska summit? We haven't made those decisions. But off session, that'll be one of my major tasks. The governor and the lieutenant governor will be out there. During session, I'll be doing some of it well. But it can't be one person. And I appreciated Common Ground, Cliff Groh, and Gunnar Knapp coming down. Commonwealth North has got their fiscal policy studies. The transition team was fabulous. Engaging the transition team members into communicating to their communities as well. That education to the state is going to be a huge priority, and it doesn't rest in one place, but the administration will take on a huge role in it.
And, Representative Edgman, we've had this discussion before, and, you're as a member of this committee, as long as I've known you, you've always spent, it isn't just the 90 days we're here. You're always out in the community, as we expect all of us finance members to do that. Working with the public and how we tell this story of Alaska's budget is going to be critical in getting the public support so that they understand what's going on. Representative Munoz suggested something to me earlier this year. At what time, can we find time in the agenda? It might have to be after its session. Do we send members of this committee out to the communities to talk to the communities, community councils, chambers, whatever we have to do, so that they understand the budget process that we're going through? And so we're trying to work out different opportunities, again, where we partner with the public into creating better understanding of where we really have no choice. If you don't have the money, you can't spend it, and that's the bottom line. So that's our goal. Monday, we will be meeting here again at 1:30. It will be our first department overview with the Department of Health and Social Services. So we will be gaveling in here, and I'll be able to turn that meeting over to our able vice chair, Representative Sadler, where he's going to lead us in the first discussion on Department of Health and Services. So thank you, folks.